I'm Kevin DeCristofano.
I'm Sean Flanagan, and we are the Ninja Turtle Nerds.
Your weekly podcast for covering the Ninja Turtle comics one issue at a time. How have you been since I last talked to you, Sean?
I've been good. I just finished the 20...
sounded very robotic.
Yeah, I know.
How have you been? I talked to you, Sean?
I just finished the 2012 cartoon. It was pretty good. I thought season 5 was kind of unnecessary. But,
That about it? For your life?
Yeah,
that's what you've accomplished.
It's really thrilling. Okay. It's been that and 6-day work weeks, which are super fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I know how that is. But you got this podcast going for you, so that'll brighten your day, right?
Sure.
Right? And I mean, we got a good issue to talk about today. We're talking about issue 29, which came out in March of 1990. See that segue? It's 30 pages, written by A.C. Farley, art by A.C. Farley, with letters by A.C. Farley. He did the whole triple threat. Steve Levine is still missing, so I don't know when he's coming back. I think he does come back to do letters at some point, but he's still missing.
I hope so, because I have grown concerned.
And to help us discuss this crazy issue, we have Kara and Nick on the line from the I Read Comic Books podcast. How you doing?
Hi, guys.
Hey, everybody. Good.
Well, so awesome.
Your podcast is the one that taught me about Ice Cream Man, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah, thanks for that. I'm like eagerly waiting.
I was
going to
say, I'm sorry.
No, Kevin brought that up. He goes, oh, two things. One, listen to I Read Comic Books. I was like, okay. Two, there's a book they talk about that's totally you. And now I'm just waiting for volume 5 to stop getting pushed back.
Yeah. No, Mike, who's in charge of the show, he and I absolutely adore that book, and so it kind of became our own little mini series. It's if you're someone who likes to read too much, although maybe not too much, into a book, Ice Cream Man has layers. Oh my goodness.
Turning away from creepy books to not so creepy books, we're going to be talking about the Turtles today. We'll take some turns here. I'd like to hear, we'll start with you, Nick, since you were just talking about how you got into the Turtles and what your general turtle knowledge is.
Sure. So I'm definitely one of those people who is old enough to remember the original animated series being on TV.
Woo!
And I remember it because it would air at an obscenely early time in the morning. I think it was like, gosh, it was like 5:40 in the morning or like 6. And I remember it because I would always get up extra early so I wouldn't miss any of it. And so there was always like a televangelism program on before it. So mm-hmm. I got about 20 minutes of that in my day.
And the MC Hammer cartoon after it, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And so... you know, most of my exposure was probably that cartoon. My sister and I would basically just like tiptoe down into the basement to watch it, because my parents were both educators, and so they were like, no TV on the main floor, right? Like, we need to get our kids away from the evils of television. And so I think they thought that if they put it in the basement, we would be too scared to go down there and watch Ninja Turtles. So, I mean, I didn't know if this show was going to be me rehashing all of my childhood trauma, but like, if you guys are game, you know, then I guess we're good. So yeah, I mean, most of my exposure as a kid was the cartoon. I think in terms of like beyond that, really, you know, again, my parents were very much like no violent stuff, no violent toys and all of that stuff. So, I think the closest I got to like Ninja Turtles merchandise was like a purple vinyl wallet. It exists. I looked it up yesterday. I Googled it because I was like, is this a figment of my imagination or was this something?
No, that actually sounds familiar to yeah. me. I wonder if I had that.
And it had a Leo and I think Donatello, you know, fighting each other on the front. And it was one of those bizarre moments where it's like, I haven't seen this thing for over 20 years. And yet looking at the image now, I know exactly, you know, this thing meant so much to me at one point. Right. So
I feel like it had like a specific smell. Or maybe
I mean,
I'm
it
crazy.
Was vinyl yeah. and it like when it yeah. got hot out, like the whole wallet would stick together. So you couldn't even, you know, get your stuff out of it. So it was, you know, not the most efficient thing. I did get one Ninja Turtles toy I remember as a kid, and it was Mike the Sewer Surfer. I don't know if you guys remember this action figure. It was arguably the least violent one of the bunch, which I think is why my aunt thought she could get away with giving me that for Christmas. Because like there was nothing, it was like Michelangelo just wants to hang out and he doesn't want to fight today. And my aunt was like, okay, this might be safe. Maybe I won't get in trouble with Nick's mom if we get him this one. So, and then really the turtles weren't that much a part of my life until, I got into comics, and then 4 or 5 years ago, I sort of picked up the comic on a whim. I mean, largely because I'd sort of dismissed IDW comics on the whole in some ways, because I was like, okay, they're just mining franchise nostalgia IPs, right? It was a pretty cynical
mostly
look, but yeah, right? It's like, you know, it's just tapping into 80s nostalgia. But a friend of mine had me read G.I. Joe versus Transformers. I think it's that order. I don't think it's reverse. And it's got art by Tom Scioli, and it is absolutely the most bonkers book you'll ever read. And at that moment, I was like, wow, IDW really let some really crazy people like run wild. Like, if they're going to let them do that, maybe I will check out the Ninja Turtles, because I'd seen a couple of the covers by Eastman, and I was like, oh, I really kind of like this fusion of like older, gritty line work with like modern, cleaner, you know, tools that we have these days. And so I started reading that, and basically at this point I've just been kind of going back and forth between, I've been reading the old Eastman stuff from the beginning, not recolored, sorry guys, I don't believe in it, and
that's okay.
I mean it loses so much, the art loses so much sometimes when you have digital recoloring done. And
I buy everything, so I read it from all the angles. Like, there's the Ultimate Collections, which are in black and white, and then there's the color. Yeah, I buy everything.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm sure IDW is like, oh, thank God, we've got him. We've got him in our corner. Yeah. So I've just been kind of reading both simultaneously, and I'm not caught up on either completely at this point, but I'm really enjoying both. So I guess that's just a few minutes of my history with turtles, I guess.
It's just funny to think, Nick, that, you know, here Kevin and I were kids having our Ghostbusters team up with our turtles, and you had your lone Michelangelo who was doing taxes or...
Yeah. As long as it wasn't violent, it's, you know, it's okay. So... Yeah, no, it was, there was a lot of reading going on in my childhood, and not as much, proton packs and, Ninja Turtle vans, and I know all this because my cousin would usually parade all of these things out at, Christmas, and I'm not bitter about it. I'm not.
It didn't scar you at you all.
I'm not still mad about it. That's the good part, can you tell? So, he had the thing that launched the pizzas. Do you guys remember this?
Oh, like, the it was pizza battery launcher? Operated.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And everybody would knock all their action figures over with it.
Mm-hmm. Shoot the cat.
And on all the pizzas, it said not to aim it at like living things.
Yep.
Don't aim it at anything's face or something.
We
like
always
that.
Did.
Well, again, like I was watching yesterday. It was another moment of like YouTubing it and going, was this toy real or is my brain like going insane? And I found these guys on YouTube that were like, yeah, when we were kids, we would like shoot the pizzas into each other's mouths. I was like, what is even going on?
That's like, not safe.
Number one choking device. Anyway.
They're the reason we don't have cool toys anymore.
It might also be because we're 36, but I could be wrong.
But before we get into the issue, I'd also like to hear from Kara, her history with the mutated teenagers.
With my little baby tootin' teenage needle teetles. Sorry, that's like my favorite Tumblr meme ever about them. It's just a text box that goes tootin' teenage needle teetles, and it's just stuck in your head for the rest of the day. So my like childhood awareness of the turtles was, I guess, the kind of general osmosis that kids in the 90s had, whether or not you watched any of these shows, you just kind of knew about them because you would like play games at recess. And at some point, my mom got like an enormous box of turtles at a yard sale. And so my brother and I had like 30 of them secondhand. And we just played with them Not as much as the Legos, but it was up there. But my, like, real awareness of the Turtles didn't really start till I was in, like, middle school. The 2003 Nickelodeon animated show, and we watched that, like, every day after school. Very invested in the drama against the Foot Clan. And in...
That's a good version.
Yeah, and in 2007, when they came out with that animated movie, which I found out later was actually, like, a sequel to the sort of live-action ones from earlier... I went to see it with three of my friends, and it was like this movie theater was empty except for like two sets of parents and their like little boy child, and then it's like me and my three teenage girlfriends just like dying over how obsessed we were with this movie. This was also around the time that I was actually like visiting a comic shop and learned that the Turtles originated as a comic, which blew my mind because I was like, no, they're a TV show. So yeah, finding about the origin was pretty interesting. I think at that point they were like selling, like every now and again they reissue issue number one in black and white for like a dollar or something, and it was like that.
Yeah, it was a free comic book day giveaway one year, I remember.
Yeah, I think I got it from that, and I was like, what do you mean Shredder dies? That's the whole point of the franchise, isn't it? So and then I think like I felt of that I was more of like a turtle person, and you guys are gonna hate me and I apologize in advance, but the most recent movies, I am so obsessed with them. It is, like, as far... Like, I think the first one is, like, a pretty good modern interpretation of the original, like, grittiness and over-the-topness of the Eastman Laird comics. And then Out of the Shadows was the studio listening to everyone being like, but I want the cartoon from when I was a kid, and then just doing that instead. And to me, it just kind of showcases the versatility of the Turtles. I will say there was one more like key aspect to all of this is when I was in college, I saw a video on I think cracked.com where they were talking about how the Turtles like align with the medieval like four humors, and these are like the four basic like personality types that there are in media, and they were breaking down like, and the same thing aligns with Sex and the City and like Scooby-Doo and the gang and all this, and it blew my mind, and I must have watched it 100 times. And so now, in addition to asking people when I meet them like, what's your Hogwarts house / zodiac sign, I'm like, which turtle are you? Like, I did a Twitter poll the other day saying like, which turtle are you? And most people said Donnie. I'm like, no, I already know all of you are nerds. This doesn't help me. Give me something else.
So
that's so funny because the Ninja Turtle Minute podcast, and we've brought it up a few times too, have always brought up that those, I didn't know there was a specific term for it, like you just said, but that those four personalities pop up so often. Like there's Fantastic Four we bring up all the time, there's Ghostbusters, we've brought up a few different examples of it. Those are the two that come to the tip of my tongue here, but yeah, it is definitely something that's recycled over and over again.
So Kara, to go into your you made me think of two things. One, since we were talking about The Last Airbender before we start recording, the 2007 movie Splinter is Uncle Iroh.
What?
So. Oh, mind blown.
Oh, fun fact. Thank you.
As far as turtles, like, I don't know if this holds true for anyone else, and I'm sure I brought it up on the show before, but Raphael has always been my favorite turtle. But whenever I was at school or with my friends, I would lie and say it was Michelangelo, because my mom thought Raph was a bad influence.
And he is.
No, he's not. Okay. Thing with Raph is that he just has a lot of emotions and he doesn't know what to do with them because he's a teenager. So sometimes he expresses them in more physical or hurtful ways than other people. But as he learns and grows as a mutant turtle, not a human, he will be fine. It's just he has so many feelings that he doesn't know what to do with. And that's okay. You just need to learn how those things are impacting other people. So now that you've told me that you always liked Raphael, I'm like, oh, you're just so full of feelings. Are you okay? Do you need a hug?
Sometimes I do.
I can never choose. Like, I would answer Donatello for the longest time, but for like a while now, I think I'm leaning more towards Michelangelo. So I don't know what I would have answered.
I would have done...
Like, I remember as a kid, my favorite was Leonardo, which I know nobody voted for in the poll. But as a kid, he was my favorite. He was the one who I bought, like, that toy that was just like a turtle nose. Like I bought that was the turtle I bought.
I have his Doc Martens. they did that Doc Martens turtle editions maybe like 5 years ago now. And I have the Leonardo ones and they're pretty fun. Yeah. I was mad because all the other turtles were sold out and I like them all much more, but I was like, no, I am having a turtle on my foot. If it's Leo, that's fine.
I've grown to appreciate Leo more as we've done this show. Because when I was a kid, I'm like, yeah, he's the straight-laced one. Now I'm like, no, he has some good ideas that make sense.
He's the responsible one.
Leo probably has a robust stock portfolio that he's been carefully maintaining for years. So I can see why the people would look at him and go, you know what? I see stability.
Yeah,
here.
Which narratively can be very boring, but in real life, that's the dude you want in your corner.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. The Men of Shadow is the title of issue 29. I don't know if I said that already. And we can start picking apart this cover here. I don't really have any notes on the cover.
Oh, you don't?
It's kind of a very generic cover.
Oh, I got notes.
Give them.
I was scared. That's my note.
Okay. Nick, thoughts?
I mean, I think this is definitely one of those comics where you can see that it's not as traditionally turtle-centric, and the cover like already tips you off to the fact that it's like, I don't know, like it felt like this issue was sort of, especially when I think I read something about like Farley's from Massachusetts, and obviously Farley has some ideas on Lovecraft that he's maybe a little bit more interested in speaking on than perhaps the turtles, but we can go into that later. My point would be that the cover makes it feel less turtle centric than other things for sure.
All right. Well, what I get out of it, cause you know, I think weird. So the cover to me is Jesse the Body Ventura Vampire, Charlie Sheen, and the Geriatric Ninja Turtles in Men of Shadow.
I can see that. Yeah. I can definitely see that.
I'd buy a ticket.
Well, originally I thought this was the design of the turtles you didn't like, because I'm like, why do they look elderly? But
yeah, right. Don't they look old? They look tired. It looks like nobody has slept for 72 hours, and they all look sad too. They're like the resting. It's like resting sad turtle face, I guess is what you would call it. But
yeah, I was waiting for like a reveal that this was a future story at some point. Kind of like the other issue we did that said pre-Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I thought this was going to say like, I literally was waiting for it to say like middle-aged Ninja Turtles at some point or something like that.
Well, apparently Laird has said that he's disavowed this issue and he says it's not canon, apparently.
Pretty much none of the guest era here is. Like, it's kind of weird that we're going through them all on this show, but I'm just a stickler.
Yeah.
It's okay to be a completist.
I mean, it's kind of funny because it's like he's the kid who will let you play in his like, play on the same playground, but he's just going to disavow you, right? He's like, it's okay for you to, you know, come in here, probably make me some money, but like, you know, my stuff is the real stuff, right? And
yep.
They got a little Hans Moleman to them.
They do.
I'm a
so
ninja.
We start the issue off with a prologue where there's this guy sitting in some kind of spaceship, talking about how he wants to be a hero, and his computer is looking up files on the Necronomicon,
which as you do.
Nick mentioned. And then we cut away from him to go see the Ninja Turtles fighting a giant turtle robot. So more giant mechanized robots in the turtles. I don't know if the people who wrote those letters columns that we talked with Ahmed about are going to be upset, but robots are here to stay in the turtle comics, apparently.
It's on the move again. No, really? How many robots stand still?
Yeah, there was a very long discussion about this robot and the potential of this robot falling. Yes, it was it was almost a treatise, basically. Yeah.
And then it's funny that it's supposed to be like a reveal that Donatello pops out, because it's like it's a the robot looks like a turtle. We knew it was going to be one of the turtles.
Yeah, I know.
But I did appreciate that reveal because, like, My struggle with the original comics is that you really have to be paying attention to the weapons, or else you don't know which turtle is which, because the dialogue also hasn't finessed by this point. So when Donnie popped out of that robot, I was like, well, at least I know where one of them is. Like, I don't know about the other
no,
three.
It would have been great if he pops out and it goes, hey, I'm Raphael. And it's like, oh, no. Oh, no. I won't ever figure this out.
I like what Sean said in one of our other episodes, where sometimes it's like a math problem where you figure it out by process of elimination. Like, okay, I know that one's Leonardo and this one's Donatello, so if Raphael is here, it must be Michelangelo.
It's just where you pray that everybody constantly refers to each other by their names. You're just like, please, 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 please. Because the comic never ended up with the monogrammed belt buckles, right? The monogrammed belt buckles were also just an invention of the
cartoon.
Of the show.
Yeah.
Correct. I don't think they ever get those in the comics. Maybe like one or two issues if they're throwing in like a reference, but
that was always like my moment. I was like, please, like, don't ever let the turtles become pacifists or I will never figure out which one is which. Like, that will be the end. If they abandon a life of violence, it's just going to be four identical Ninja Turtles.
Dear Eastman and Laird, please put belt buckles. Nick does not know.
Please,
who
belt
is
buckles.
Who.
Please, masks. Name tags would work. That's fine.
So then the story hurries us along, nothing else to see here, over to Arkham, Massachusetts, where we're introduced to Max and Purvis, two kids that I'm not really sure why they're in this comic, but they they bought a first printing of The Dark Knight Returns, which I looked up came out 4 years before this comic came out. I wanted to know how recent it was, so 4 years before this issue.
And it looks polybagged, so it's very 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not reading that sucker. I got to give it to Purvis.
You're going to go home and read this? No way.
Purvis's parents.
Well, I think
knew
it's
what
weird
they
that
doing.
They have this whole discussion about his parents, like grounding him in summer school and stuff. Something that on my second read through for research, I was like, this doesn't come into play at all. It's just, but it kind of gives it this like Stephen King Stand By Me feeling to these characters.
At this point, Purvis's parents have named him Purvis, so he's pretty much grounded for existence. this is what, the third or fourth one that's kind of got a Stephen King kid vibe.
Well, yeah, but the others were by the. Oh no, we're not on Rick. This is not a Rick comic. So yeah. Rick, I can never say his last name. Rick Vite.
I don't know. But go ahead, Nick.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I sort of saw that as kind of that 90s, I was going to say sort of a stand-in for the reader, but then again, I don't think, maybe I'm wrong. Younger kids were reading Ninja Turtle comics, so I guess I really don't see that being that plausible.
Well, it
either.
Could be the stand-in, the intent could have been stand-in for the reader because the rest of the issue is dude in a space pod looking up the Necronomicon, the mutant Ninja Turtles rolling around Massachusetts in a robot that looks like them, and zombie vampire, maybe alien Eldritch god worshippers. So there needed to be an everyman that the comic reader could identify with. It might not have worked the way that they wanted it to, but that's what I think they were doing.
To be fair, Kara, this isn't even the wackiest issue we've done. So.
And it won't be the wackiest when we're finished.
No.
Oh, no. I mean, that is the one thing I love about the Ninja Turtles comics is that they get really weird really fast almost right out of the gate. Like, this is not something that sneaks up on you. Like, they are in outer space with weird, weird stuff going on really early on. And that was kind of the one thing that did shock me when I started reading the Eastman and Laird, is I was like, wow, this is actually really bizarre, which is great.
So just like in Stephen King's stories, the kids get bullied by a local town bully. They tear up his comic book that he just spent all that money on.
Which is impressive because it's in Mylar, so that's a strong blow.
And then we're like, never mind that now, move along. We yes and, as the improv people would say, over to University of Massachusetts, where we learn that a group of armed men have taken some hostages. Well, they have two hostages in the library, but the two they have helped everyone else get out somehow. We don't see how, but very quickly we learn the way they were able to do that is they are Casey and April.
And no the, other explanation needed.
Exactly. No. They give us nothing. It's just like, yeah, those two helped get all the other people out of there, and then we cut right in. Oh, it's Casey and April. Okay, that explains it.
Casey's pickup truck conveniently can fit a mechanized robot in it now, so it's one of those pickups from the 90s that would change size based on what the story required.
They're not going to use it yet, though.
Apparently Splinter can drive.
Good for him.
He's the one standing at the doorway. Why does
lifelong learning from Master Splinter.
Oh, my. University of Massachusetts looks like Gomez Adams is the dean.
Yeah, this guy, Farley, like, really likes Lovecraft, or he at least has talked to someone who really likes Lovecraft.
Actually, you know what? I'm gonna save it till the end, but there is, like, a... I don't know if you're the copy that you read had it, but there's, like, a pro... Like, there's an intro where the author talks about how he pulled from a lot of different sources.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mine has
and like, made a lot of references.
I don't think I had that. I had the recolored version, which, honestly, I probably would have preferred.
Black and white?
Yeah, honestly, the way that he does his sketching and his inking, I think the color work actually kind of, like, really muddied it. But, you know, it happens.
Yeah, in the colored version, Casey is, like, green.
It's a little weird. Boy. He looks kind of ill.
It's like a sludge color.
Let me read the note here. This is as good a time as any. So just a quick note to explain a few things about the story in this comic. There are names and locations from many stories. I've done this out of respect. I hope that by referring to these other stories, this sounds like a hostage note.
Oh.
I hope that by referring to these stories, this comic will be interesting and introduce people to some reading they will probably enjoy. Just like when I was introduced to the same stuff back in the late 60s, when a lot of comics began to do exactly the same thing for me. So in case you're a reader who thinks Arkham was picked up from certain DC comics, you should read The Shadow over Innsmouth by H.P. Lovecraft. So right there. And then Clark Ashton Allard owes his existence to Doc Savage and The Shadow, with a little Lovecraft in the middle. Maximilian Jones and Purvis Walker are patterned after the kids in all of the late Robert Heinlein's early stories. I don't know who that is.
Robert Heinlein, maybe?
Probably. I can't read.
Starship Troopers guy? Okay. Huh.
That's
kids who yearn for excitement and adventure. Yeah, that sounds like him. So it goes on like that, him just listing, like, basically, hey, I pulled from a ton of different places for this, so we've mentioned a few of them, and
I guess,
and he puts it in a prologue that doesn't get reprinted.
I guess you have to admire the confidence and audacity that it takes to say, I'm going to pack 50 years worth of sci-fi fantasy references into 30 pages of Turtle comic, and you will like it.
Well, I only have 30 pages, so let's do it.
I only have 30 pages of a Ninja Turtles comic. Let's do it. Like, I think that's probably the best part about it, is it's like, I'm sure at some point he was just writing this, and then someone was like, I don't know if you forgot, but this is actually a Ninja Turtles book. And he's like, oh, well, you know, we'll make this work.
They're in there. They showed up. They're fighting zombies.
At least they're in here more than the Time Traveler trilogy.
This is true. This is true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole thing you read, that all I got out of it is that I guess it's okay, based on what he said, to show my 6-year-old nephew From Beyond a little earlier than I intended.
Okay.
I wouldn't really
do
that.
So back to the hostage situation. Apparently the people taking the hostages are vampires. We can skip to that part of the story. And they're trying to hide their physical evidence. They're trying to hide physical evidence of their existence. And the leader gives one of them, like, a dead man switch. It's like a detonator with the button pushed, so if he goes down, it'll go kaboom booms.
You shoot the hostage. Sorry, I was in my little world of speed references. Go on.
So the turtles creep in through a window and immediately make themselves known.
Mm-hmm.
it's kind of weird that they snuck in.
They're good to sneak in, but they're not good enough to continue being stealthy enough to like... perform a sneak attack. Yeah, it's curious.
But before a big battle can start from that, the guy from the prologue appears out of nowhere, and he grabs, I don't know if I said this guy's name yet, Mallet, who's the leader, and, you know, big fight scene. So the mystery guy from the prologue tells the turtles that basically that these are vampires and they need to stab them with wooden things in the heart or separate the head from the body. So he gives them the rules for the video game level and they go at it. And then the vampires turn into bats and fly out the window.
I mean, of course.
Yeah. That's what they do, right?
Oh, but he falls out the window with the one that had the dead man switch and they go kaboom booms. I forgot
well,
that
part. Well, I mean, I think that even sort of brushes over what honestly might be probably my favorite part of the issue,
ooh,
which is the fact that, like, he grabs the explosives and Donatello offers to disarm the bomb.
Oh,
and
that's right.
Allard is like, you know what? I have a better idea. I'm going to tumble out of this window with the explosives, and we'll just see what happens. And then there's this absolutely, it's my two favorite panels of the issue. It's the Ninja Turtles just standing on the balcony, and you watch them sort of watch as he flies off into the sky, blows up, and then you have all the turtles sort of looking downward as they're like, all right, well, he's probably dead. And, yeah, I think that's probably my favorite moment.
So your favorite moment?
I could disarm it. No.
Yours is above mine because I like the guy in the truck who's just like, professional wrestling was never like this. It's like,
yeah.
Oh yeah,
it's a weird.
Days,
that's a weird aside too. Yeah, it's
days
like,
you'd go to WWF 90s. And be like, I need some henchmen.
Yeah, these guys did look like peak 90s henchmen, right? In terms of the sunglasses, in terms of the hair, in terms of the outfits, like it's very 90s henchmen. Like it's not hard to date them. It's easy.
Well, it might be hard to date them because it doesn't seem like they're the kind to pick up a check. Oh.
<Ba-dum-bum>.
Got it.
No, I appreciated the costuming because when like I felt like the writer went out of his way to be like, this kid is getting Dark Knight Returns. And so from that point on, I just took the entire aesthetic of this book to be a nod to Dark Knight Returns with all like those punk gangs.
I thought that too. I thought they definitely look like the punk gangs. And at one point in a couple of panels, the leader, Sean, I think you had somebody you said you thought he looked like. I thought he looked like Kenan Ivory Wayans in early episodes in Living Color.
So we get Kenan Ivory Wayans or Jesse the Body Ventura. Okay. What are we, about halfway through the issue? I don't know. Like, I'm with Nick where this is definitely a guest error where it's like, hey, you can do an issue, and it's like, oh, great, I have this story.
I've heard this type of story referred to as a, I think, I already forgot the term, an and-then script, I think they call it, because it's like, and then, like, it just keeps going and going and going. It's definitely guest era, like you were saying, Sean.
I mean, the kids are there to rescue future guy as he falls out of the sky unscathed.
Yeah, that was my next note, is so it cuts from there to the kids, and if this was a Simpsons episode, it would have been them having a conversation, and then, boom, like, because he just exploded.
They're
missed opportunity.
These kids just, oh, hey, guy fell out of, oh, you got a ship over here? Great.
Well, at first he was talking about how he's an alien. Max was explaining to Purvis that his home is light years away, and he's a prince brought to Earth.
And then they get him in his back to tank, and he's like, hold on 1 second. The kid's like, oh, all right. Like, how often are they running into, like, interdimensional technology that this is just like, eh?
Well, I guess, you know, these kids have firmly established through their earlier dialogue that things aren't super great on the home front or the school front, so this is just total escapism, sort of wish fulfillment based on the dialogue from the previous page saying like, oh, I'm an alien prince, and then boom, here's your spaceship, kid, look around, have fun.
So we find out that the mystery man's name is Clark Ashton Allard, and he puts himself into a little robot-y thing, space technology, I don't know what you'd call this, little cocoon.
It looks
thing?
Like a cryo chamber. It really
yeah,
does.
Cryo chamber. There you
this
go.
This robot doctor.
And he tells the kids not to touch anything, and they immediately ignore that and go to the main
computer.
They immediately
computer. Go on his diary. Yeah. They immediately access his computer's journal. Don't touch anything. No problem. We're going to find your most private item here.
That
but
is
now we
a,
learn what the plot is.
Yeah, that's a busy panel. Good God.
It's so a book. It really is. It's a book.
It's cool, but then you turn the page, and we got turtles again. In case you forgot that this is a turtle book.
That's your reward. That's your reward for reading
oh,
that.
Hey. You go through that panel. Here's the turtles fixing... It's Donatello, I think. He's fixing the truck.
So basically the library where that hostage situation was, I don't think we said it was moved to the college. And we find out that it never should have been moved because on its original site, it was protected by powerful spells and all kinds of magic that were that it voided their warranty when they moved it.
Necronomicon's not under warranty.
And then, like you guys said, we cut back to Casey and the turtles, and they're driving the truck, and they've tracked down they've tracked the vampires to Arkham, Massachusetts, but right outside of city limits is a Jeep that's broken down. And they have their giant turtle bot with them. So everyone climbs on board, and Donatello gets in the robot, and they're ready to go.
So this is another full-page panel I want as a shirt, but it looks so uncomfortable the way they're all, like, hanging on the mecha, and Splinter's, like, being cradled like he's a baby.
Like, he looks very serene.
He's just like, here we go with this nonsense again.
And then we're coming up on my favorite part of the issue is, so the vampires show up where the cryogenic chamber thing is and the kids are. They grab the kids. One of the boys runs away, and he in classic, like, what more could go wrong fashion, his bike, like, he bends the heck out of that tire. I don't know what he did, but he was trying to, you know, go get help, and he ruins his bike. And then my favorite part is out of the woods comes Casey calling out, "Hey kid, we're kind of lost. Can you give us some directions?" with their giant robot. You're in the right spot, Casey. You don't need directions.
And then you get this really great Innsmouth, Mass seaside village and every Lovecraftian thing ever. Like,
mm-hmm. Oh, you mean the giant demon they're going to summon? That's not Lovecraftian.
Yeah, Dagon is definitely not Lovecraftian. Yeah.
I can't tell which part of the creepy vampire guy I hate the most. Is it the cornrows? Is it the porn stash? Is it the fact that he's missing half of his nose? Like, I just, like, the more I look at him, the more grossed out I am. I'm just like, who
probably
starts
this? With the nose.
There's nothing if not consistent in his aesthetic appearance.
Oh boy, the cornrow goes right into a ponytail?
At least he never talks about needing plasma.
But, like, now that I'm looking at it, are they even cornrows, or is it just very shortly shorn mohawks? Like, there's, like, 10 tiny mohawks just curving around the back of his head.
A bunch, yeah, it's a very, wow.
God, I'm going to have nightmares about his hair.
It's a choose-your-own hairstyle.
It really is. There's like a long braid.
It's whatever you want
back.
It to be.
Yeah.
I don't. Now that you mention it, I think you're right. I don't think they're cornrows.
It's like
no,
little
they're,
tiny
they're
cuts.
Little.
If it's like a choose-your-own hairstyle, like he definitely had a why-not-both moment then.
Yeah. I want this and that. And
all right, so where did we leave off in the story? So
summoning the demon.
They summon the dragon. We can skip to there. They summon the dragoon, whatever you call it. Big tentacle beast that they call a dragon. It looks
Dagon.
Like the
Dagon.
Word, Dagon. Dagon. That's the word. Yeah. I can't read. I already said that this episode.
It's always tentacles. Why is it always tentacles?
You'd have to talk to HP.
Yeah,
about
HP Lovecraft.
You probably don't even want to know.
Yeah. not a good guy.
I'm sure his explanation is probably really offensive.
I was going to say, it's probably a very racist or sexist reason.
Almost certainly.
Yeah.
But no, I love this part because you have, what is his name again? Allard?
Yeah.
Or Allard?
Allard.
And he's like, guys, I know what to do. And once again, you have him, like, grabbing the important device and, like, diving through the air again to seemingly die again, only to, in fact, not have died again.
My favorite part of the battle is towards the end here. There's a vampire that's going to, you know, bite Casey Jones in the neck. And I like that Max stabs the monster in the back with one of Casey's broken baseball bats. There's just something about it. Because I'm a big Casey Jones fan. So anytime his sports weapons come into play, I'm a big fan. Especially to kill a vampire.
You know, on that same page, yeah, I do like that. It is cool despite his disturbing stash. I like the panel as the vampire is dying. He kind of looks like the Crypt Keeper from the animated series that was on ABC or whatever. And mm-hmm. I just realized that Purvis and Max look like the Burger King kids.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Dating myself absolutely. A little bit there. But, yeah, that...
The BK Kids Club?
Yeah, the BK Kids Club. Yep. It looks like two of them.
And the BK Kids Club gave out Ninja Turtle VHS tapes. It all comes back together.
Boom! Figured it out. That really is that guy's one plan, huh? I'd like an issue where he can't dive into something with an explosive.
Yeah.
Like he has to figure out how to get through the 10 items or less aisle or something. It's just like...
They have this artifact that that kills the big monster that they summoned. They managed to throw the artifact into its mouth. I know I'm kind of rushing through it here, but those are the basics of the ending here. There's an explosion, rocks the building to its foundation, and the turtles and everyone run for cover. The building collapses. The dust settles, and Splinter sends the turtles in to find Allard and the artifact, but there's no sign of the monster anymore.
And then the next day you're right back to bullying.
Yeah, I actually like the twist on this here where you think now they're gonna, you know, knock the bully down and doesn't work out for them still.
Right, and for me it was either you were going to get that scenario or you were going to get the scenario of, hi, I'm the kids and my new friend is a superhero and I'm going to bring my superhero friend around and now I'm not going to get bullied anymore, except that doesn't happen at all.
Yeah.
Like the turtles, I kept waiting for the turtles to be like waiting in the wings and it's like, nope, sorry, kid.
But I think that in the long run, you know, we're just seeing this one interaction of all these kids, but it seems like, you know, a lot of bullies just want like the attention and the reaction, and now that these boys just like are not face anymore, sure they got this one hit, but eventually these bullies are going to get bored because they're just not going to get a rise anymore.
See, the way I looked at that whole page, I thought Casey and the turtles were just across the street while these kids were getting beat up again.
I like Kara's version more. They're playing the long game. They're like, they'll get tired of bullying.
It's a reasonable expectation. They're just like, this again? Come on, I dealt with vampires. Do I have to deal with you? They're just over it.
We can't believe these kids. They like getting punched.
So then Casey tells April that he'll be home as soon as they fix the truck. And we end on the Clark character in his healing pod. He will never return. Sorry.
There's a lot happening on this page. There's like three different subplots going on just like 10 panels.
So... Yeah, it's a crazy issue. It's almost like he knew that he had to do everything he wanted to do in one. I wonder how they decided to divvy out, like, okay, you get a 3-issue arc, you've got one shot. You know, it probably depended a lot on the artist's schedule, but clearly a lot of work went into it. You know, it wasn't something he was just turning in to get a paycheck.
I would have liked to have seen this over 2 or even 3 issues, because my problem with this was following the action, and then I feel like if there were more pages, there would have been a little bit more room for all these like backstory elements. Like, there's clearly so much mythos to this issue, and I just did not absorb it all because I was too busy trying to figure out just what was happening.
I'd take this as 3 issues and no issues of the time traveler. I think that would have made a lot more sense.
This was definitely an issue where you kind of wonder, was there an editor? Was the editor like on sabbatical for a prolonged period of time? Because like there are so many elements where I can just see the editor being like, you have five stories going on. Pick three. Like, pick three. You can have your invulnerable explosive man, or you can have the kids, or you can have the Lovecraft elements, or you can have the vampire elements, but like, pick three. And don't forget, one of them has to be Ninja Turtles. I know you'd probably love to not include them at all and just do whatever other three you want, but Turtles have to be one of them. I'm sure there was like a sticky note on his desk that was like, don't forget, this is Turtles.
It's funny because even the Turtles have their own story going on with that robot they built. Yeah. Like, it's not even just like just plain old, hey, we're here. It's like we have our own thing we were up to at the time.
Well, part of me wonders if that thing became a toy, and so it's one of those things.
I don't think it did.
Include this thing.
I don't think so. No, maybe it was on the cartoon at some point. I know if it was on the cartoon, it was probably a toy.
I think it's too similar to Metalhead.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Can I tell you guys the part of this issue that blew my mind the most? Like, we've got Elder Gods. Yeah. We've got Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, we've got vampire aliens with weird haircuts, and through it all, the thing that I kept coming back to as what is the whole thing takes place in Massachusetts, and every piece of media that I have consumed about the Turtles prior to this point has involved the Turtles very firmly being established in New York City, specifically on the island of Manhattan. So the whole time I was just like, why are the Turtles in Massachusetts? They're in the woods, like they're at the library, like how are they hiding?
Well, I've actually talked on this podcast about how I like every time they do the trip to Northampton.
Right.
But right around this issue, I'm starting to feel like, okay, this, because every guest era issue
is Northampton.
Not every, but like 9 out of 10 take place during the Northampton thing now. And I'm just like, okay, you get enough Northampton. Put them back in the city. I haven't seen them in the city for, actually, now that I think of it, the majority of the run.
Yeah.
We've spent more time out of New York than in it so far.
We've been
out
in
these 30 issues.
Well,
we've been in
why
space.
This part's not canon.
Yeah.
Yeah, they left New York issue
10.
So 11 was the start of Northampton. Then they went back for two issues, and everything else between 10 and now, with the exception of those two, has been Northampton. So, yeah, at this point in Turtles history, they're more known for living in Northampton than they are for New York. So I think that's everything everyone has to say about this issue. Am I correct? Anyone got any other notes?
I mean, it's an entertaining issue. I don't think it's the strongest. And as a horror guy, it's actually one of the weakest Lovecraft stories I've seen.
Fair.
But I admire, this is the only time I can think of where someone's looking through the Necronomicon digitally. Usually, you have to actually find the book, which is made of human flesh and inked in blood and all that stuff. So I'm glad somebody took the time to upload that for this guy.
What do you think the file size is on the curses put in the Necronomicon?
666 megabytes.
I feel like it was almost like we rehearsed that. So that's everything about this issue. You know, before we wrap up here today, though, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about the podcast our guests come from, I Read Comic Books. So, Kara, why don't you start us off here on this?
So the I Read Comic Books podcast is a weekly podcast where a revolving group of hosts discuss different comic book issues or themes, and the topic varies by the week. We usually start off things by talking about what we read and liked that week, and then go into the topic of the week at hand. In the summer and sometimes in the winter, we'll put out little mini-sodes, and we've got a lot of different special series. Like last year, I recorded a whole like Star Wars comics special with one of our co-hosts, Brian. We have a Saga of Saga miniseries going on for our Patreon subscribers first. So if you liked Nick and I refusing to let a word in edgewise on this lovely episode, you might also enjoy listening to us on the I Read Comic Books podcast on Twitter at IRCB Podcast.
Yeah, actually, I love listening to your show, and now I got to get on the Patreon because nobody really talks about Saga, so now I'm intrigued.
Oh, we've got like kind of what you guys are doing with the Turtles, one episode per issue. We do one episode per issue of Saga.
Ooh, you think this gets complicated, Kevin?
And that's pretty much everything I think we have for this episode. So as for, you can find them in our show notes. I'm going to put down the links to that podcast in there. So check that out. If you guys want to say it verbally, where they can find you, I should probably do that.
Yeah, we're at IRCBpodcast.com is the home for all of the things that we do with the podcast. I'm on Twitter. My handle is at Karazam. That's at KARASZAM. And I tweet about mostly nerdy nonsense. On my most recent rewatch of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie that I said earlier I am like high-key obsessed with, I did like a whole week where I did my makeup like one of the turtles every single day, where I was like, if Michelangelo was a human girl who liked makeup, what would he do with his face?
There's like three ifs in that.
So I do stuff like that, which I find amusing.
All right, and you can find us at TMNT Nerds on Twitter. We are at TMNT Nerds on Instagram, where we'll be posting all the visual stuff we talked about this episode. We have a Patreon, the Ninja Turtle Nerds on Patreon. Search that and give us all your money. So, like I like to say every episode too, none of that goes into our pocket. We're trying to get new microphones for the show, maybe do website, like to start a sticker club. When people start donating, we'll have more answers, but better microphones is definitely the first goal. And you can email us if you want to do something long form at tmntnerds@gmail.com. So thank everybody for listening, and we'll be back next week for issue number 30. We're 30 issues into Mirage, Sean, plus the bonuses we did. It's crazy.
Madness.
Okay, we'll see you then.